In this, the second part of my series, I will be looking at entering and recording your crime scene, as well as picking up items that have to be examined later for evidence. So let's start, first of all, with the way in and the way out of your crime scene. So if it's an apartment or a house, that's pretty simple. All you have to do is walk through the front door. If it's a large outdoor area, make sure that you have established one path of entry, one path of exit, and nobody diverges from that. This is pretty simple because there could be evidence on either side of your point of entry that may become crucial to your case. If there's non-essential people, as we saw last week with the crowd in the multiple homicide-suicide scene, get them out. Now, place an officer at the very beginning of your crime scene, at the entrance, and have him make a record of everybody who comes in and comes out, so that he's keeping a logbook of what has happened and who has come in. From a more personal perspective, you should ensure that the crime scene has been cleared of any hidden dangers and that a search has been completed for any suspects who may be hiding. Now, we talked before about arson scenes and being sure that the fire is fully put out and it's safe to walk into the structure. With the advent of DNA technology, it's most important that the forensic identification officers wear officer protection suits. It's the white Tyvek with booties, gloves, hood, and a mask and eye protection. Interestingly, the eye protection is valuable because if you're standing around the body or the scene and you're blinking and you don't have eye protection on, chances are an eyelash could fall onto your body or onto your scene and you may pick it up and be submitting it as evidence. Until you're ready to process them, footprints can be covered by sheets of plastic, paper, or cardboard, and secured by weights if they're outside to protect them from rain or snow. Handguns, knives, shell casings, or spent bullets should be covered by plastic sheets, paper, or a cardboard box. And I've seen us cover shell casings and bullets with takeout coffee cups, as long as you put a weight on top of it and doesn't blow away. Larger items can be protected by a tarpaulin roof or a tent. Unless absolutely necessary, as you're on the way to the crime scene, instruct the officers, do not attempt to move evidence prior to your arrival. Now, most officers are panicked when they see a gun lying at a crime scene, and they figure they should move it, they should make it safe, they should put trigger locks on it, etc. Well, a gun lying in the ground is just like a stone lying in the ground. It's not going to go off on its own. It's not going to shoot anybody by accident. It's just lying there. And most officers forget that forensic investigators are also police officers. We're trained to handle firearms, we're trained to clear them, and we're also trained to handle them properly so that they can be processed later for fingerprints. Meticulous notes of your actions should be kept to document actions regarding the protection of evidence to avoid legal challenges at any subsequent trial. And that pretty well makes common sense. If you happen to find a suspect's fingerprints on a shell casing, for example, then you're going to have to prove that you had continuity of evidence on that shell casing from the time you arrived until the time it went into the lab to be processed for fingerprints. Don't try to photograph the scene of evidence with a cellular camera phone. Images have to be stored, and there's a chance that one or two embarrassing items can be found when forensic technicians open your cell phone to see images of the crime scene. I know in the past, judges have said during a murder trial that you have a choice of either using video images or photographic images, but I will not let you use both. So you can see where if you've taken a few pictures with your cell phone camera and the judge won't allow any other records to be introduced because you've had the cell phone image, then you're in trouble. Should a judge order your cell phone to be kept as evidence because you have images of the crime scene, then you've lost your phone and it could expose it to examination by defense counsel looking for addresses, text messages about the scene, and could be a real big embarrassment to you and the service. Notes. You've got to keep good notes at a crime scene. It's got to be the time, the date, weather conditions, and it doesn't matter whether you're inside or outside. If it's raining outside, but the crime scene's inside, good idea just to keep a note of the weather regardless. Who else was there with you? And what sights greeted you on arrival? Lighting conditions, odors you may detect, and the path you initially took to get to the scene. Look up, look down, and look sideways. In some homicides, especially beating homicides or stabbings, what you'll see is blood from the victim cast off from a knife blade, and the blood flicks up onto the ceiling and forms a track. So that gives you a pretty good indication of how the homicide occurred. You stab somebody and then you pull a knife out and pull it out quickly, and you'll see blood spray on the ceiling. I'd also recommend making a rough sketch of the scene in your memo book or whatever item you're using to record your scene notes, because it's not doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to be an artist. All you have to do is draw a few things in your book, furniture, the position of the body, etc. Many larger services now employ civilian drafting technicians. They'll come to your scene. And I can remember years ago, they used to have a tape measure and a sketch pad, and they would take detailed measurements of the scene, go back to the office, and reproduce those measurements on a formal sketch. The sketch will be produced in a larger format so that the diagram of the crime scene can be used in court for both the Crown or the prosecutor and the defense counsel to point out various items of interest in the scene. Nowadays, of course, technology has given us 3D mapping, a device called a total station. What they do are they're laser devices that scan everything at your scene. You just set it up on a tripod, push a button, and this device will scan all the areas of your crime scene, take it back to the office, and you can reproduce that crime scene using the data collected by your device. There's a scene from the movie Cool Hand Luke, starring Paul Newman, where he's a prisoner in a work camp and the warden and he don't get along. And at one point, Newman mouths off to the warden. The warden hauls back, punches him in the face, and knocks him down into a ditch. And he looks at him and he says, "What we have here is a failure to communicate." And that is one of the biggest faults of crime scene examination. You have people at your office as an investigator wanting to see what other resources you need. Your boss needs to know in case you're going to be accruing overtime. So it's just a simple phone call. Pick up your phone, give them a call, and update them about what's going on. Don't smoke, drink, or eat within the crime scene perimeter. That pretty well goes without saying, but you'd be surprised how many people try and sneak a smoke or a coffee, and chances are if they spill it, they may contaminate some of your evidence. If it's a homicide, you have to be responsible for bagging the body, and then you put a forensic seal on the zipper to make sure it's not contaminated. When the body goes to the coroner's office for an autopsy, make sure that an officer attends all the time from the time that the body is removed from the scene until it arrives at the coroner's office for the autopsy. And make sure that you send an officer who you know who's going to take good notes, and he must stay with the body until he's relieved or until someone comes and formally identifies the victim. As the forensic investigator, the first thing you do when you arrive at a scene is to take a sweeping look around to see what's there. Make sure that any transient or fragile evidence is secured, or if necessary, try and collect it right away so it doesn't get destroyed or damaged. What you can see is your crime scene, and you kind of give yourself a chance to formulate a plan. When you're compiling your notes, if the place smells, if the body's been lying there for a few weeks, put that in your notes. The jury would love that type of evidence because they know that you're being honest. So you can get up there and say, the place smelled worse than I've smelled in a long time. Or you can say that there was so much blood around it was hard to walk on the floors. Again, what you're doing is you're bringing the judge and or the jury back into the crime scene. That's your paint a verbal picture of the scene so that you can bring them back right into the crime scene itself using a combination of the sketches that we talked about and photography. With the advent of digital cameras, it's a lot easier to record your crime scene. You can take as many photographs as you want without ever having to worry about running out of film. So take pictures from all angles, close up, far back, any kind of evidence that's there. If the victim has been declared dead in the proper manner, then there's nothing wrong with leaving the body as it lies because you now have the luxury of time. You can examine around the body, examine for evidence. You can look for trace evidence that might fall off when the body is moved. And don't listen to people say, well, it's only the human decent thing to do, because you still have the control of that crime scene. And your body is one of the major sources of evidence for the scene. Our next session will go into more detail about collecting evidence, but the one thing you have to be careful about doing is photographing it as it sits, because you can't take it away and put it back again in case you've forgotten to take a picture of it. It just doesn't work. I can always remember a time when I went to a sexual assault. It was a rape, and a suspect had followed a woman into her apartment. They were on the street, she was walking home, he followed her, got through the front door of the apartment, and then knocked on the door after she went inside. So if you can picture the scene, he's standing at the door, his left hand is up against the door frame. Nice shiny door frame, great stuff. And she opens the door, he pushes his way inside. But guess what? He's left a big thumbprint and a part of his palm on the door frame where he was leaning before she opened the door. So Mr. Identification Man, me, gets there and learns where the guy had been standing. And I get my trusty fingerprint brush out. I dust up the door frame, and lo and behold, there's a beautiful thumbprint sitting there. So I got all excited, and I'm just about to lift the fingerprint off when I stopped myself and said, hold on, take a picture of it. So I got a scale, a small ruler, put it next to the thumbprint so we could print it up in the photo lab as life size. And then I got my tape out, and my hand slipped. The tape crumpled up, and the fingerprint wasn't any good because I had screwed up in my excitement to get the thumbprint off the frame. The whole thing had wrinkled. So what happened is I had saved the image, and one of our forensic examiners was able to look at the image, search the files, and came up with the identity of the rapist. If you recall, I talked earlier about going to a scene and taking pictures, overall pictures, close-up pictures. You could come back with 150, 200 images. And we had an officer attend just a simple break and enter at one point in the city, and he had a trainee with him. And so they were taking pictures of the living room, the dining room, where the suspect had gone to search for valuables. They left and thought nothing more of it until about 3 months later, the insurance adjuster calls. And he said, "I understand you were the officers at the crime scene." "Yes." "And can you tell me a bit about it?" "Well, we took pictures." "Oh, that's great. Now, the person that has the policy on the house is claiming that the thieves stole a large screen TV right out of his living room." So the officer went back into the files, checked the pictures, and lo and behold, here was the living room with the self-same large screen TV sitting there bright as day, and in fact, it was never stolen. And so the insurance company refused to pay the claim and told the policyholder he was lucky he didn't get charged with fraud. In rounding up the session for this podcast, there are several points about crime scene examination that I can't emphasize enough. The first one is, obviously, do you need a search warrant to go and examine the scene? Second thing is officer protection. You don't want to take any evidence into the scene, and you certainly don't want to bring any evidence out of the scene. Remember our good old French policeman, Locard. So you have to have a minimum of vinyl gloves or surgical gloves, whatever, an officer protection suit with a hood, booties, a surgical mask, and if you're going to be working close up, also try and get a pair of safety glasses as well. So the next podcast is going to be about evidence collection. You've taken your photographs, your notes, your sketches, and you pretty well are finished examining the scene. So now what do you do with all the evidence that you see there? So we're going to talk about that and give you some helpful hints as well.